You are listening to BensTorah.com.
If there are any of the listeners who are diabetic or pre-diabetic, there are many adjustments to the Siddurim, to Pesach, that we could adjust, not having to change halacha, but adjustments in terms of that are within the borders of parameters of halacha, where there are many solutions to the diabetic and pre-diabetic situations. So if you are in that circumstance, please don't hesitate to contact me over the next week or so, 2 weeks, so we could discuss ways to minimize the issues of being a diabetic or pre-diabetic with the challenges that are unique to Pesach and to the Seder. I'm just going to mention, list off a number of items that do not need, as you're preparing your Pesach list, a number of items that do not need to be have a special kosher Pesach supervision, and you don't have to look around and drive yourselves crazy trying to find them, or you can buy them at whatever cheaper stores you might find up there. That is number one. Any unflavored water, unflavored seltzers that don't have added minerals do not need any kosher Pesach supervision. Any raw nuts that have nothing but nuts in the ingredients, that don't even have no BHT, no preservatives, just plain raw nuts, those do not need any hashgacha and nor kosher Pesach supervision. Similarly, non-decaffeinated coffee, meaning regular coffee that's not flavored, can be used for without any hashgacha. Keep in mind, when it's decaffeinated, sometimes the liquid that they process the coffee beans in order to decaffeinate them, that itself, that liquid can be derived from chametz. So what I'm saying, that has to be decaffeinated, has to be, of course, kosher Pesach. Many people ask me about Kirkland, Costco salmon, those little packages, those portions of salmon, that also does not need to have a kosher Pesach symbol on it. Any extra virgin olive oil, by definition, extra virgin olive oil is all kosher Pesach. If you have white sugar also, any white sugar is fine. However, brown sugar does need a hashgacha because sometimes they color it with molasses and they color it with other colorings that are sensitive for Pesach production. Any plain tea bags, you know, the plain Lipton tea bags also doesn't need kosher Pesach. And also, I recently saw on the CRC website that frozen fruit that has no other ingredients in it, if it's not sweetened and it's not cooked, it is kosher Pesach. If it has additions like ascorbic or citric acid, those could be chametz, those could be kidneys. But if it's just frozen fruit, even if it is sweetened with sugar, sugar also is one of the non-sensitive ingredients. And therefore, frozen fruit, even if it is sweetened with sugar, also does not need to be designated as kosher Pesach. However, that's only frozen fruit, not frozen vegetables. The reason for that is frozen vegetables, even if they're raw frozen vegetables, even though the company writes raw on it, they're actually often blanched, which means they're cooked for just a few minutes. And sometimes they're blanched with the same, on the same production line as chametz, as pastas that are blanched on those same lines. So therefore, when I say frozen fruit, I only mean fruit and not frozen vegetables. Let's get to 2 points that relate to the corona era that we find ourselves in Erev Pesach, and that is, what about hand sanitizers? After all, hand sanitizers are typically 62% alcohol, Urel, for example. So do those have chametz issues? So the CRC is positioned, and they're certainly very well, we could certainly rely on them, that the research has been done that they're not considered edible, and we'll talk about that more later. But Purell sanitizers and such, even if it does have 62% alcohol, they can be used on Pesach. You do not have to check them. You do not have to discard them. They can be used and kept in your possession on Pesach. Let's go to disposable gloves, another contemporary time-sensitive question, and that is any things that are all the disposable items, like paper plates and napkins and cups and bowls, and paper bags and plastic plates, all those things, you don't have to worry about being kosher Pesach. However, when it comes to disposable gloves, sometimes the disposable gloves have starches in them to make them fit on your hands tightly, to make them be more comfortable on your hand. Those powders can sometimes be made from kidneys, sometimes from innocuous powders that are irrelevant to Pesach, and sometimes they could be made even with oatmeal. And therefore, if you do use gloves on Pesach or in your preparation for Pesach, try to find powder-free gloves for Pesach. So this way, if it's powder-free, you don't have to be worried about there being anything that's sensitive as far as Pesach is concerned. Now, that was all just to get a few points, a few hopefully coolers in front of our locomotive. I want to now just share one thought that I think is important to keep in mind. I've shared this thought a few years ago, but I think we have more people on this call than I had on my shir a few years ago. And that is that the Torah says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Eretz Mitzrayim, Hayom atem yotzim b'chodesh ha'aviv. Hashem took us out b'chodesh ha'aviv. And Rashi says, I know when Hashem's talking to Bnei Israel and saying, I'm taking you out right now in the spring. We all know that it's the spring. We know when we're being taken out. Why does Hashem say specifically, I'm taking you out b'chodesh ha'aviv? That's the question that Rashi asks. And Rashi answers that Hashem's trying to communicate an idea to Klal Yisrael. Hashem's trying to say, Ru'u chesed shegmalchem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, look at how much I love you. I'm taking you out b'chodesh u'kosher latzeis. It's nice outside. It's pleasant outside. It's not too hot. It's not too cold. That's the chesed, one of the chesedim, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking us out, not just taking us out of Mitzrayim, but taking us out specifically in Chodesh Aviv. Now, this is the insight I'd like to share with you. If you look later on in the Torah, in Sefer Dvarim, the Torah says that you have to keep Pesach. Of course, we know that you have to keep Pesach. But look how the Torah says that you have to keep Pesach. Shamar es chodesh ha'aviv. V'asisa pesach l'ashem al-kecha. Ki b'chodesh ha'aviv ha'tziyacha Hashem al-kecha v'mitzrayim laila. The pasuk is focusing on the fact that you have to remember for all generations that Hashem took you out, b'chodesh ha'aviv. Perhaps it's trying to tell us, perhaps it's trying to communicate, the Torah is trying to communicate to us that we have to remember as we prepare for Pesach, that Pesach is specifically b'chodesh ha'aviv, because Hashem wants us to be able to enjoy, so Hashem wants us to be able to be relaxed, not so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to drive ourselves crazy, and that's why it doesn't just say that Pesach is b'chodesh ha'aviv. But Shamar is Chodesh Aviv. Keep that aspect of the Aviv, that pleasantness, that enjoyableness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu set up this Yantif with. Keep that in mind as you will be observing your Chag HaAviv, your Pesach, your Chodesh HaAviv. And therefore, with that in mind, again, I will share the story that I know some people remembered from a few years ago when I grew up, when I was a little boy. My job, among the jobs that I had, was that I had to vacuum the chametz. Now that I'm online, I could show you. If you look on top of the, you see the top of that window on top of the shade? Well, on top of the window, there's a molding about 7.5 feet tall, and my job was to vacuum the molding 7.5 feet off the ground, and I kept on telling my mother, Mommy, there's no Cheerios 7.5 feet from the ground on top of the window molding, but that was my job at Pesach. So therefore, I tell you, if you have lots of time in your hand, you have nothing to do with it, you're welcome to do that. If you have other things or you're pressured, you just have to clean chametz. You don't have to do spring cleaning. This is Manchei Rusenu. Don't make your family, don't make your kids the Korban Pesach, as people like to joke. And if you want to scrape the walls and scrape the ceilings, gesunte hate. The halacha says explicitly in Shulchan Aruch that there are people who scrape the walls. Again, they had different kinds of walls. They had wood walls. They had other kinds of walls. But the Shulchan Aruch says there are people who do that. And halacha is that you're not allowed to make fun of people who do. And therefore, all those who want to go overboard with their Pesach cleaning, gesunte hate, we respect you. We love you for it. But don't think that it's necessary. And certainly don't sacrifice the shalom bayis. So sacrifice if you have kids at home and it's going to make it pressurized in the house because you want to do all kinds of things that are not necessary for halacha, which we'll discuss in a moment. Please keep those things in mind. What we want to talk about today is two parts to getting ready for Pesach. Part number one is the rest of the house, and part number two is the kitchen and the dining room. And those two parts are going to be vastly different, and the attitude that we're going to have in cleaning our homes is going to be vastly different because the halachas of chametz are very different when it comes to eating chametz and consuming chametz, as opposed to owning chametz. Of course, on Pesach, we can't own chametz. The Isra Daraisa, the Bayirah, Bayimatzeh, we can't acquire chametz. But chametz eating is, of course, much more chamer. And we'll talk about that as we go. We have to keep in mind that chametz is unique from all the Yisurim in the Torah, and that, A, there's an Isra, of course, in owning it, as opposed to other Yisurim. Secondly, it carries with it a Chiv Karis, which is, of course, more severe than most of the Yisurim. And thirdly, even a tiny morsel, even a mashu of chametz, can render something not kosher. There's no din of bittul like we have in the rest of the Torah. But that halacha of mashu and bittul, and there's no bittul, only applies to achila. And now let's speak about the rest of the house. We're not going to be speaking about achila. We're not going to be concerned with what's getting into my food. We're just going to be talking about the parameters of bayirah, bayimatzeh, not only chametz in the rest of my house. So let me start with just a little bit of 1 minute of lamdas that will hopefully set the frame for what our goal is for the next few minutes, talking about the rest of the house. That's going to be the first section of this morning's discussion. Why do you have to do bedikas chametz? I mean, why do you have to clean your house for chametz? After all, if you're not allowed to own chametz, so simply do bittul. And when you say bittul, when you recite the declaration of bittul chametz, kol chamir v'chamir dikvu shusi, hareza hefker v'leve batel kafra ara, I say that it's hefker, I don't own it, so that really takes care of all the ownership of chametz. So I now don't, once I declare that bittul chametz, I no longer own that chametz. So why do I still have to clean my house after I did bittul? So the Gemara raises this question, the Rishonim discussed this, and the Ran suggests the following. He says that sometimes you could halachically rid yourself of the chametz by making it hefker, for example. But we're still worried that if you happen to find something, right, you come across, you're cleaning you're on the middle of Pesach, you find the best example I like to give is those little licorice nibs, those little, Twizzlers cut up into tiny pieces. So you reach behind your couch and under the cushion, and you see, you had some simcha in your house, and somebody dropped a piece of licorice, those little licorice nibs behind the cushion. And as you lose yourself for a moment in luxuriating over the enthusiastic fervor in which you find this little piece of licorice, so since it's the kind of thing that you eat all year long, you might lose yourself for a moment and eat this one too. So therefore, Chacham decided that you should get rid of it, even though you no longer own it anyway, because you did a bittul. That's called lo bedili. Secondly, we're also concerned, the Ran says, that if you just do bittul, you do that in your mind with your words, you might not understand the words that you're reciting, you might not really understand or commit to destroy mentally all the chametz that you have, you might not be serious about your hefker, and therefore the Chacham wants you to also get rid of it physically from your premises. That's one concern. Another concern that we have is that when you find something, even if you were mevatel it, if you find something that's exciting, you might not be willing to get rid of it immediately. You might realize that it's Pesach, but it looks good. And you tell yourself, you know what, maybe I, and in that moment that you said maybe, or what should I do, or that moment you might violate the Isser of owning chametz. So therefore, Chachamim said you have to get rid of all the chametz in your house, but only that chametz that you will violate bal yirba bal yimatzei. So what is the chametz that a person will own and thereby violate only chametz bal yirba bal yimatzei? So what is the chametz that we're looking for? So one of the early Rishonim, the Sefer Yireim, quoted in Halacha, says the following. The only chametz items for which you violate the ownership of bal yirba bal yimatzei is if it's, listen to this carefully. Let me rephrase that. You only violate something that is roi lechol kitzas. Aval, says the Yireim. If something is smaller than a kizayis and it's dirty, it has a double whammy. I'll repeat that because this is how the Mishnah Berurah paskins. If chametz is smaller than a kizayis, smaller than the size of an olive, and it's dirty, there is no requirement to clean that for Pesach. If you don't believe me, that the Mishnah Berurah is telling you that all those crumbs that you have on the floor anywhere in your house, all those crumbs that you have in crevices on the floor, all those places underneath the couches and all those places in that are dusty and any place else that could be trampled, you do not have to clean that for Pesach. You could do whatever you want for spring cleaning. This is the Mishnah Berurah and Tuf Mem Dalet Tesvav. Any crumbs that are on the floor, any crumbs that are dirty, that will get dirty, you do not have to clean for Pesach. So anything you have in a corner, sometimes you get down on your hands and knees and you see that corner, you see, I think in the corner of my bedroom, there's something on that floor in the corner, I can't get it out. You come to get on your floor with a toothpick and a needle to get it out of the corner. There's no halachic necessity. There's no requirement to do that. Anything that's on the floor and less than a kezias is not considered chametz. Now, that means that if I have a piece of Twizzlers that we just spoke about, that little Twizzler nib, we'll call it, that fell behind the couch, so it's less than a kezias, but it's not dirty. It fell behind the couch. It kept very clean. It was very clean there. Now if it got all dusty from the lens, okay, you're right, so I don't even have to get rid of that. Even if you have some cookie crumbs that fall behind the cushions on your couch, if it's the kind of area where there's lint and dirt behind the couch, so you're right. So even those crumbs, those cookie crumbs, don't have to be destroyed, don't have to be removed for Pesach. But sometimes behind the cushions, they are still clean. So therefore, we do want to, of course, vacuum the inside of the, you want to vacuum the cushion behind the cushions. That is a great idea because it could be a clean area. And you'll get your crumbs out by vacuuming those cushions. Based on that, we could also bring the following point. What about crumbs that can be inside of your svarim? Sometimes a person learns, and inside the svarim there could be some crumbs. So here we have a very famous machlokas, the Chazon Ish was machmir, and he held that you have to check all your svarim for Pesach to make sure there are no crumbs in your svarim. So I remember when I was young, I grew up near the Frankel Shtiebel in Flatbush on 21st Street, and I remember the Rebbe's children before Pesach opened up, they had a gigantic wall of thousands and thousands of svarim, and the Rebbe's children would go through every single sefer, lift up the sefer, crumple through the pages, hold it upside down, and put the sefer back, checking every sefer in the base medrash. For chametz, that's a wonderful chumrah, but Moshe Feinstein says that it is not necessary. The minhag olam is not to check, that one does not need to check svarim. But as we'll see later, we'll talk about later, svarim that were not checked for Pesach should not be brought to the table on Pesach. And that's because this leniency that we're speaking of now, that if you have a small piece of chametz that's less than kezayis, and also it's dirty, then you cannot, although there's no issur of owning it, of bal yirba bal yimatzei, however, there still is, of course, an issur in eating it. So therefore, you can't let it get on the table. We'll talk more about that later. Now, we spoke about what you have to look for on Pesach for Bedikas Chametz, and that is whatever's on the floor, by definition. If it's less than a kezayis on the floor, you have nothing to worry about. But where are we going to look? So the Shulchan Aruch tells us that we only have to check those areas that you typically go to during your mealtime. So if you have a room that you never go to during your meals, if you have a closet that you never go to during your meal, if you have a drawer that you never go to during the meal, you do not need to check that for Pesach. So for example, let's say you have a sock drawer, a drawer of socks. Let's say you have a drawer of sweaters. So it could be if it's cold, you're eating and it's cold, you go to your sweater drawer during the meal. So we're worried that maybe you dropped some chametz in your sweater drawer. So your sweater drawer is a drawer that you should indeed check for chametz as you're cleaning for chametz the next few weeks. However, your sock drawer, your underwear drawer, your drawer where you keep anything else not during the meal, those drawers do not have to be cleaned at all, don't have to be checked whatsoever for chametz. Now, this is all true. And you could say the same thing about rooms. If you know that there's a room that you never brought, let's say you have a an office, and you don't eat in your office, you don't eat breakfast in your office. I mean, I do lots of eating while I'm sitting in my office, while I'm learning, while I'm on the phone. But let's say you have an office that you're careful, you don't bring chametz into your office, and there's no, you don't go to the office while during meals. So we don't have to be concerned that you have any chametz in your office, and you're not obligated to clean or check your office whatsoever. And the same is true about those people who have a bedroom, and you're careful not to bring food into your bedroom all year long, and you don't typically go to your bedroom during meals. That's a little hard to say. If that were to be the case, you would not be required to do any bedikah in your bedroom whatsoever. However, everything that we said regarding not needing to check those areas where you don't bring chametz is only true if you don't have children in the house. But if you have children in the house, or in the time of the Gemara, they didn't speak about children, they spoke about weasels. Weasels and children are somewhat synonymous. Weasels would drag chametz from place to place within your house. children, grandchildren are the same thing. You could be so careful. You never, ever, ever, ever bring chametz onto the second floor and the basement and the loft, whatever your absolute ironclad rules are. That's all good and well, except you have a cute little three-year-old who's running around the house, who's doing whatever he wants. He couldn't care less what Safta says. He couldn't care less what Mommy says. And he's schlepping his chametz and his treasure treats throughout the house into every single drawer. So if you have kids in the house, you do have to check all the drawers. You do have to check all the closets to make sure that that cute little kid, God bless him, didn't bring the chametz into those locations. But if you don't have little kids and you don't have weasels in the house or animals that might schlep chametz around your house, any place where you don't go during a mealtime does not, and you don't bring chametz during the year, does not have to be checked. Let's go to another scenario where you do not have to check chametz. The Gemara in Pesachim tells us, the Mishnah in Pesachim tells us, chametz shenafla alav mapola. So let's say I have chametz. I know I have chametz. But an avalanche falls on it, or the house falls down right on top of my chametz. Says the Mishnah, harehu kemivur. It is as though it is destroyed. That means that any chametz that you cannot access, even if you definitively own it, you are not in violation of Bayira and Bayimatzeh for owning that chametz. So for example, let's say if you would check behind your refrigerator, or you would check under your stove, you would find chametz there. You're not required to check behind your refrigerator or under your stove or anywhere else that you cannot access. Any place that you can't access, it's as though it's chametz shenafla alav mapolas and is already considered kimavur. So it is ideal that you could spray it with some kind of ammonia like Windex. All the window cleansers have a little bit of ammonia, which make it inedible for dogs. That would be a good idea. So don't move your oven. Don't move your refrigerator. Don't move your dishwasher. If you want at most, you know, a little sweep, whatever your broom fits under there, that's great. And otherwise, you're welcome to take a little spray of Windex, one quick spray across wherever you can't reach, and that's good to go. The same thing is true for your keyboard. If you're like me, you eat, if I was able to get all that chametz out of my keyboard, I could probably put together a luncheon for a small congregation. But if you have your keyboard, I'll demonstrate right here, and I have plenty of crumbs that have fallen between the keys, so I'm going to take it, I'll shake it out. Whatever doesn't come out as I shake it is something that can't be accessed. So therefore, if you want to just spray, again, you have to be careful because you don't want to ruin the connections, but if you want to wipe it down with a little bit of Windex or something, whatever you can't get out, you don't have to worry about the fact that there are crumbs there, even though you can't access them, because it's considered chametz shenafla alav mapolas. It's considered chametz that has been, that's under an avalanche, under a collapsed building. You can't access it, and that is not required to get rid of. Okay, so that takes care of a significant portion of the house as far as what rooms we do need to check, what rooms we don't need to check. And let's talk about, besides crumbs and things like licorice and food items, what other things are considered chametz that we have to get rid of or not? So let's talk about medicines and toiletries. And I know because of the abundance of stuff available online and publications, many people are confused about how to deal with toiletries. So although there is machlokas about this, I'm going to share with you what I've received from just about all of my rebbeim, as well as what is adopted by basically all the major kashrus organizations. And that is that anything that is inedible is not chametz, period. But let me explain what that means, because there are a few, not exceptions, but you have to see the parameters of what that means. Let's start with something that's a pill or a tablet. A pill or a tablet is not edible. You have to swallow it whole. And therefore, it's nisal me'achila. And therefore, even if you're not so sick, if you have a Tylenol, you're not so sick, a person's not so sick, a person wants to take some, you know, they have a little allergies are acting up because it's the beginning of the spring, right? Chol Shaviv also brings allergies, and they want to just pop, they're not sick, they're not chol shayesh b'sakana, they're not chol shayin b'sakana, just a little mechush ba'alma. It is permissible to take a pill, swallow a pill that is swallowed, even if you're not a chola, because the fact that it's nifsal me'achila makes it not food. And just because you want it for health purposes, that's not considered achshavei. Achshavei is a concept in halacha that makes something, even though it's not considered, makes it considered. You might argue, maybe if you're putting it in your mouth, that shows that you consider it food. No, something that you put in your mouth only for refuah purposes does not constitute the halachic principle of achshavei. And therefore, anything that's swallowed, any pill that's swallowed, is fine. You don't have to check the ingredients. Even if it has wheat and yeast in the ingredients, that doesn't make a difference. It is not food. Now, it's important to realize, let's talk about a very specific thing. Let's talk about Advil. Now, Advil brand has two types of Advils. There's the regular Advil brand that has a shellac on it. The shellac is a glaze or a wax that makes it easier to swallow. Now, it happens to be Advil. Advil has a sweet shellac. They put sucrose or something or glucose, a simple sugar on the coating to make it go down easier. Oh. So even though we said that pills that you swallow are not of concern because they're not food, but if they coat it with a flavoring, well, that might make it a food. But you don't have to worry about Advil because sucrose or glucose are not Pesach-sensitive ingredients. However, it is good to know that there's an Advil which is called film-coated Advil. Film-coated Advil, that film has all kinds of inactive ingredients to help it go down easier because of the film coating. And there could be some flavors like mannitol, which is, I believe, sorbitol mannitol, which I believe is kidneyos, and other kinds of flavors that can help that film coating. So therefore, those film coated pills that have flavors for that coating, that could be a problem. But again, if it's a regular pill that you swallow that's not sweetened, if it's sweetened, it's an inactive ingredient, says sucrose or glucose, that's fine. If it's sweetened by some other ingredient like mannitol, sorbitol, or unnamed sweeteners, that should be avoided. But most of the time, that's not the case. So in general, you could assume that pills that you swallow are all fine. However, everything that we just said refers to things that you swallow and they're not fit for eating. If you have a liquid that is drunk, those are always flavored. Those are typically flavored, and chewables are flavored. So those are considered food, and therefore, since they are foods, liquids and chewables are foods, and therefore, they indeed have to be chametz free. And those are the things that you have to check the chametz listings only for those things that are liquids that you drink that are flavored that and chewable items. Those are the things that need to be chametz free. So, for example, if you have children's fever reducers, if you could try to find kosher, not kosher pesa, but if you could try to find chametz free fever reducers like acetaminophen, ibuprofen, that would be great. Again, once the kid knows how to swallow, you don't have a problem. The problem is when they don't know how to swallow, you have to give them syrups or liquids. That's where you should try to find kosher lePesach items instead of the regular liquids. Let's talk about vitamins. Vitamins. Please try to get kosher lePesach vitamins. If you're in a very specific medical, delicate medical situation and for your very specific needs, your doctor has prescribed a vitamin for your unique circumstances, I urge you to get in touch with me. And we can see it's absolutely necessary that you can't find kosher lePesach vitamins. But in general, vitamins should be kosher lePesach. Nutritional supplements should be kosher lePesach. It's just the medications that we are saying that are not considered foods. And when we talk about non-food items, we always have to think about mouthwash, toothpaste, lipstick, chapstick. All those things are not medications, but they are things that go in and around our mouth. And anything that goes in and around your mouth, it's not a medication. Even though, of course, we try not to swallow our toothpaste and we're not going to be gobbling up our chapstick, you should try to avoid chametz in the things that are related to your mouth and your lips. So therefore, you don't have to buy the kosher lePesach toothpaste, but you should check the list. I believe last year, Crest toothpaste was chametz-free. The ingredients do not have any chametz in it. You could check the list. I'll try to send something out later. There shouldn't be chametz in your toothpaste, in your mouthwash, in your lipstick, in your chapstick. Any unflavored floss is totally fine. Once again, to the flavored flosses, that could be questionable. Regular unflavored chapstick is also fine. That's as far as non-food items. Anything, as I think I mentioned before, anything that's a paper good, disposable cups, plates, bags, those are all fine. You don't have to worry about those other than, of course, I mentioned disposable gloves that might have powder that could be questionable. Now, this idea of not being roi la'achila applies to everything. So it should come out that if you have, for example, wheat germ shampoo, wheat germ might be chametz. If you have all kinds of other shampoos or soaps or bars or other kinds of things that could be made with real chametz, if it's not edible, it's not chametz. However, Ramosha Feinstein revolutionized the way we look at this point. And he says the following. Ramosha Feinstein lived on the Lower East Side, and some of you might remember the Bowery area on the Lower East Side where there were lots of drunkards. And Ramosha noticed that the drunkards who lived in the Bowery were desperate to find alcohol and would, in their desperation to get alcohol that they could consume for their addictions, for their alcohol addictions, they would distill liquids from whatever they could get their hands on. So for example, if you had perfume or cologne, people who are desperate for alcohol, like in jails, this happens also, they would distill those liquids and extract the alcohol and therefore Moshe Feinstein said to drink. And therefore Moshe Feinstein says anything that's a liquid, again, only if it's a real liquid that could never be distilled, if it has alcohol in it, we have to be concerned with chametz because of that alcohol that is drinkable. And therefore, anything that has alcohol that's a liquid, we do have to be concerned of. So therefore, if you have, for example, perfumes, colognes, mouthwash that have alcohol, if you have aftershaves, for example, even though you never drink it, but since it could be distilled to extract the alcohol, that Ramosha finds instead is a problem. However, that's only true for liquids. But things like shampoo, things like solids, like deodorants, things like even spray deodorants, things like even the liquid soaps, those are not real liquids. Only if it's a real liquid that is subject to distillation. And therefore, anything that's a deodorant, you don't have to be worried. You don't have to check the ingredient panel on your stick deodorants, on your soaps, on your shampoos. All of those are totally fine. So that, I think, covers the discussion for medicines and for non-edible toiletries. I want to just reiterate, I will be looking at my text messages at the end of this discussion. If any of you have questions, please send a message to my phone number, which is 646-369-6017. I hope you can see that on your screen right now. 646-369-6017. Now let's go back to the next section of this year. Okay, so now that we talked about the rest of the house, not the kitchen or dining room, we're not up to that yet. How do you clean your house? I'm going to tell you basically the steps that you have to take to clean the rest of your house. I know for some of you it's obvious. For other people it might be interesting that you don't have to do as much as you think you have to do. Yeah, you should sweep the floors. You have to look in the drawers and the closets that you typically visit during meals, unless you have children. Medicine cabinets, you only have to remove the liquids that have alcohol. You have to check your knapsacks, your pocketbooks, your closets, where your clothes are, that you do have to check. So in your closets, you have to check your pockets, sometimes your jacket pockets, sometimes your coat pockets. You could have, when you went skiing a month and a half ago, you had a granola bar in your park, your ski parka. So you have to check your pockets. You have to look through the toy bins to make sure you have no crumbs. Because remember, we said crumbs are batel themselves only if they're dirty. But if it's in a toy bin, it's not necessarily dirty. So even though it's a small lesson of kazayis, you still have to check your toy bins if you have crumbs. And then, of course, you want to make sure that your garbage pails outside don't have any edible chametz in them. You could always spray them with ammonia for whatever gook or whatever chametz might be there. Pets, we're not going to deal with pets. Of course, if you have pets, then you'll feed them on chametz. I'm sorry, Pesach. Kosher Pesach food. It doesn't mean you have to buy kosher Pesach items, but you can speak to me individually about your pet diet if you don't know how to deal with your pet. And that is our discussion for cleaning the rest of your house. The duration of the shiur, I will talk about what about cleaning your kitchen or your dining room. But before that, let me just take any text that you sent me regarding cleaning of the house. Dental floss is okay, even if it's wax, as long as it's not flavored. That's the answer to one question. Thank you. I have a list of mouthwashes that we'll try to send out as far as appropriate chametz-free mouthwashes. Thank you for that. And okay, everything in the kitchen we'll get to shortly. Okay, let's go and talk about not balyura balyamatzeh, but now we're going to talk about things in the kitchen and the dining room where life will be a little bit more focused, because here we're not only worried about balyura balyamatzeh, we're worried even about the tiniest speck in the kitchen and related to our food. Now, we have to know, of course, as I mentioned, that when it comes to, even though by Rabbi Matzah is only possibly Malkus for a Kazayas, when it comes to eating, even a Mashahu, there's also a Chumrah that we have when it comes to eating, that typically there's a Halacha that any flavor that's 24 hours old is considered stale and doesn't impact the kashas of what you're cooking. For example, if you'd call me and say, Rabbi Orlian, I took my milchika spoon and I stirred my chicken soup, I would tell you, well, if that milchika spoon wasn't used for hot cheese or hot milk in the past 24 hours, your filet chicken soup is fine. That is true all year long, but it's not true on Pesach. So if you would take, God forbid, a chametz tikka spoon and that you used with noodles, for example, hot noodles, 5 months ago, and you stir your Pesach tikka soup with that chametz tikka spoon, you will render that food chametz tik. That's a unique quality that only Pesach has and not the other areas of your house. So let's talk now about things that are going to relate to food. But before we get to things that relate to food, let's talk about our clothing. Now, we said that even a mashu, even a tiny speck of chametz that falls into food, is an issur d'oraisa. So here, we're going to be a little bit machmir. I encourage you that any clothing that you're going to be wearing on Pesach, you want to brush off. You have to look, think about it. I know it's a lot of days, it's 8 days, but think about the clothes you plan on wearing on Pesach. If it's in the laundry, if it comes straight from the laundry, that's fine. But let's say you have a suit that you're not getting straight from the dry cleaners. So you might want to consider the dry cleaning it, or at least if you're not going to dry clean your clothes for Pesach, at least brush off those suits or those outfits that you're going to be wearing for Pesach before Pesach. Because again, we're concerned that maybe at the Kiddush, you had the suit that you wore to the Shabbos Kiddush 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, it's already 2 weeks. You got a crumb on your, in your lapel right over there. You see that lapel thing? That little corner in the lapel? Now you can lean over your food as you're eating your maror or your charoset is going to fall from there. You'll get a little bang if a little particle falls into your maror, your charoset, and that could be a problem. So therefore, if you just make sure you dust off that soup that you're going to be wearing, that would solve the problem. Alternatively, if you make sure that when you eat on Pesach, you're not wearing your suit jackets that didn't just come back from the dry cleaner, that's another way of solving the issue. Now, any clothing you're not going to be wearing on Pesach, if you have your winter clothing that you're not going to be wearing on Pesach, so you don't have to clean them. Just make sure that the pockets are empty and don't have a kazayas of chametz in them. Don't have anything seriously edible. That's all you have to be worried about for the stuff you're not wearing. We're only talking about the things that you will wear at the table. Then you have to be concerned even with little bits of crumbs. Second rule that I think is very important that relates to the table is that nothing from the rest of the house should be on a Pesach table. No toys. The kids want to play with Lego and they like bringing the Lego to the table. That's great. All year long, not on Pesach. If kids want to read a book at the table, if you want to read a book at the table, that's great, but not on Pesach. When it comes to Pesach, nothing goes on the table other than things that you could be certain that it is kosher Pesach. Also, sometimes you have bikes or tricycles or scooters, rollerblades. If you ride them around the house, it might not be so sure, because when you ride them outside, they could be going right over chametz. You drive it inside the house and it's bringing chametz all over your house because the chametz can get caught in the tires, so be aware of that. If you want to have a Pesach Haggadah over the next 2-3 weeks to prepare for your Seder, and you're going to be having that all around your house, you should have a different Haggadah you use for the Seder itself, because you don't want to use a Pesach Haggadah in the next 2-3 weeks when there's all chametz around, and put that Seder book on your Pesach table. So get yourself a different one, or make sure that it's insulated properly, it's protected properly, so it doesn't get any crumbs on it. Any svarim that you can put on your table, if you have a chumash that you always learn with, every meal of the year, you learn every Shabbos meal, Yantam meal, that chumash cannot go on the table on Pesach. Have a different set of chumash that you use for Pesach, or use it not next to the table. Move your chair back, look at your chumash, wipe your hands off, and then come back to the table to share whatever beautiful divrei Torah you found in that chumash, but don't take your chumash that you used all year to your Pesach table. And that's because when it comes to achila, eating, we're concerned with even the tiniest little crumb.
You are listening to BensTorah.com.
So, now let's talk about kashering the kitchen in terms of details for various aspects and items in the kitchen. So number one, tablecloths, fabrics, oven mitts, anything that's fabric, all you have to do, you don't have to have Pesach Tikkah hand towels, you don't have to have Pesach Tikkah oven mitts, you just have to put it in the laundry with detergent. Any chametz that's on it will be rendered nifsal me'achilas kelev, inedible, in for a dog, and therefore you don't have to worry about it. However, if you have a vinyl tablecloth, that cannot be kashered, and that needs, excuse me, to be put away. Let's talk about the other aspects. Now, we're in a time period when people are very aware of germs, and we're not talking about germs today, we're talking about chametz and only chametz. But when you walk into your house, we're worried nowadays that people want to, you know, if you have a lot of people touching the doorknobs, to disinfect doorknobs, that's a good way to transfer germs. Well, on Pesach or before Pesach, at some point, you might want to wipe down, again, since your hands will be touching your food on Pesach, so your hands can be touching all the doorknobs and be touching all the handles in your kitchen and touching all the light switches. At one point, when you're cleaning for Pesach, take a little rag with ammonia on it or with Windex and dab down the handles in your kitchen. This way, you won't have any chametz that is edible transfer from the handles, the doorknobs, the crevices, into your food. Fine. Let's go now to the table. If you have a table, we all have tables, right? We can be eating on the table. So what I encourage you to do is put a waterproof cover over your table. If you have something that's not waterproof, sometimes you could put a hot dish down on your table, the moisture could penetrate the tablecloth and create a direct line of moisture from the table to your food and cause potential chametz issues. So therefore, either put a plastic, you could have whatever you want on the table, but cover it with a plastic wrap, a plastic wrap over the tablecloth, or the tablecloth over plastic, or you could use corrugated cardboard because it also has a thick line, so there won't be direct line of penetration between moisture from the table itself and whatever hot pot you might put on there. So that's as far as the table. Now, again, since we're dealing with the kitchen and the dining room, chairs have to be cleaned very well. Chairs, especially if you have tufted chairs, when we bought chairs for our dining room, I made the mistake of buying tufted chairs, and tufted chairs have loads of crumbs in those tufts. So we have to work a little bit to try to use the vacuum and do whatever you can to get the crumbs out of those tufts. And if you do what you can, I don't think you're going to be able to spray the ammonia on fabric tufted chair because you're going to ruin the fabric. But make sure that on Pesach, you don't play with those little tufts with your hands underneath your back and underneath your legs on the chair behind you during Pesach, because there could be some little bits of chametz underneath there and you don't want to have that on your hands while you are at your Pesach table. So any removable parts of your chair that you could access, try to clean that from your crumbs. And of course, the tops of your chairs, if you could wipe it down, depending on the material, if they're metal or they're wood, if you could wipe off the tops with some Windex, I don't know if Windex will ruin wood or not, but it won't ruin metal, it won't ruin plastic, if you have plastic chairs. So those rub down the top of your chairs where you handle with your hands to prevent any crumbs from get transferred from the chair and as you're about to sit down and eat your meal. Okay, those of you who have high chairs, for the children or grandchildren, high chair, you should clean the tray well and cover the tray if you can. That's for high chairs. That's very hard to keep the tray on for high chairs, so do the best that you can. Let's talk about people who have a break front. And in the break front, you have china, you have chametz tikkah china, you have chametz tikkah crystal. Do you have to cover over that break front? The answer is no. You can have your break front intact. You don't have to cover the windows in your break front of glass, because since those are things you don't take out regularly, we're not concerned you're going to accidentally take it out over Pesach. And as far as owning the chametz that's absorbed into the crystal, into the china, there's no issue in owning chametz that's absorbed into the kelim. The issur of only chametz is only the physical chametz that's present on the outside of the kelim, and therefore you could just leave your break front as is. If you want to, you know, just put a little piece of tape or a little string on the handle that indicates that it's chametz, that is sufficient, nothing more. Of course, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that the Maharil, one of the early Ashkenazi Rishonim, was a moneylender, and he had lots of beautiful chametz tikkah, gold and silver utensils that non-Jews had lent, had pawned to him for when they would borrow money, and he held as collateral, and for the night of the Seder, he would put it all out to show the wealth, to symbolize the wealth that Bnei Israel looted from Mitzrayim when we left, when we had Bizas Hayam, all the gold and silver that we got, so he would put everything out to show the wealth, the opulence that we have. So therefore, that's a great proof. All those kelim that the Maharil put out were all chametz tikkah kelim, and yet he put it out right in front of, right on a table next to his Seder table, so things that you're not going to be using, you don't have to be worried about. Okay, everything that we spoke about up till now was cleaning. Now, let's get to kashering. Let me just take any questions that related to what I said thus far. Liquid soaps to wash your hands, for example, soft soap brand, those are all okay. Yes, all liquid soaps to wash your hands are fine. Plug-in air fresheners or air diffusers, that is a liquid. And therefore, if that has alcohol, that could be a problem. So check what the material that you that is used in that. And if it's alcohol, it's a problem. If it's not alcohol, it's fine. Next question. Milk that you purchase, we didn't get up to foods yet, but any, just it's a question that came in. Any milk that you buy before Pesach does not need Kosher Pesach supervision. If you buy it on Pesach, then you should buy Kosher Pesach milk, but not for now. Okay, just to repeat. Okay, so Kirkland walnuts. I don't know about Kirkland, I'll have to look it up, but any nuts that are raw that do not have any other ingredients in them are Kosher Pesach. Disposable plates that have colored designs, those are all fine. Dental floss, waxed, it's fine as long as it does not have any flavor. Just to reiterate, tablecloths and anything that you could launder, tablecloths, oven mitts, do not have to be kosher Pesach. You don't have to have separate ones. Just put in the laundry on hot with soap, with a detergent. If you have a plastic tablecloth cover, I don't think you should use the same one because I'm worried about little particles on it. So if you have a plastic tablecloth cover, use a different plastic tablecloth cover for Pesach. Next question. Hot cups with wax coatings are fine. Hot cups, all disposable items are fine. Okay, refrigerator shells we'll speak about in a minute. Okay, let us move to kashering. Thank you for all those questions. Again, if you have any questions, you could text me. I will share my phone number again on the screen. That's my phone number, 646-369-6017. 646-369-6017. Text me your questions and let us continue. Okay, so now let's talk about kashering. We didn't start kashering yet. So now the rule with kashering is the following. Let me share with you a fascinating Gemara, very cute Gemara, actually. Gemara Masechet Daf Lamed says the following. Ravina says to Rav Ashi, honey sakini bepischa. These knives that I use all year long. What should I do for Pesach? What should I do with all the chametzik knives? So Rav Ashi responds, "Lididi, for me, chadita kavdilan. I make new knives for Pesach. That means whatever all the kelim that I use all year long, I have a different set of kelim for Pesach." Listen to the answer. It's a fascinating answer. Amar Le Ravina responds, "I understand. Tinach Mar Deshuli. I understand. You're Rav Ashi. You're a rich Rosh Yeshiva. You could afford a second set of utensils with kashul Pesach. What about all of us? The law Asher Leimai. What could we do?" To which the Gemara concludes, "Kibolo kachpolta. Okay, you could kasher them." Now, how do we analyze this Gemara? Is this Gemara saying that kashering is only b'diavad? Is this Gemara saying that kashering is a chatila? So it seems that knives, at least knives, which was the case of the Gemara, they're talking about knives specifically, perhaps because they're difficult to kasher, perhaps because they have two sections, they have a handle and a blade, and there could be cracks, crevices in between, perhaps because knives are sometimes serrated, it is definitely, of course, advisable to have, and if it's difficult to kasher, it's definitely good to have a separate knife for Pesach. But if we apply to other things that are not knives, so of course, if we can, if we're able to afford other utensils, comes to Pesach Tikka, kalim for our kitchen, pots, pans, and cutlery, of course, that's better. But if a person does not, then let's now discuss how you kasher them. So the rule is, as that Gemara concluded, kibolo kachpoto, the same way that chametz is absorbed, the same way that anything not kosher, or chametz for that matter, is absorbed into a kli, when you do that same process, it gets purged out of the kli. So therefore, when we have silverware, let's say again, you take your, how did your spoon become chametz stick? Because you stuck it into the bowl of noodles. Or how did your pot become chametz stick? You boiled noodles in it. So therefore, you could kasher it with hagala, with boiling water. We learned hagala from the Torah that kibolo kachpoto. So the halacha is, when people want to kasher their kalim for Pesach with hot water, it's important to realize, people say, what about milchik, slashis, chametzik, and not chametzik? The rule is that all kashering, let's say one thing and then we'll say the rule, all kashering should be done before the Zman Isur Chametz. Once the Zman Isur Chametz begins on Erev Pesach in the morning at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, whatever time that is, all the rules change, and I'm not going to be relating to that. All kashering must be done before the Zman Isur Chametz on Erev Pesach. If you do, then the following rule applies. You can use any pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours, and it's clean, and you could dump into that pot of boiling water any kli that is clean and hasn't been used in 24 hours, and you could all, at the same time, put in chametz stick, pesach stick, milchik, fleishivs, as long as none of the things have been used in 24 hours and there is no physical residue, they're all cleaned, then you could kasher all those things at the same time. You could use a chametz stick pot to kasher for Pesach. You could use a milchik stick pot to kasher your fleishivs. You could use a fleishivs stick pot to kasher your milchiks. As long as the pots and the kalim have not been used for 24 hours, and they're all clean of residue, you can't kasher them with Haggalah altogether. Now, let's just go over the four steps of Haggalah, of kashering with boiling water. So this applies, of course, to all silverware, all cutlery, to pots, to small pots that you could fit into a bigger pot. So the rules are the following. You have to wait 24 hours since it was last used, with anything hot. Then, either before or after that 24-hour period, it has to be cleaned perfectly. The reason for that is because this purging of Haggalah, of kashering through boiling water, only takes away the flavor that is embedded in the walls. And it purges it, it spits it out of the walls. Anything that is physically present, any residue, the boiling water cannot impact and cannot kasher. So therefore, whatever you're going to put in Haggalah in a pot of boiling water to kasher has to be perfectly cleaned before you put it to the boiling water. Okay, so you have a clean item in a clean pot. You take your clean item and you drop it into your pot of boiling water. Leave it there for 10 seconds, 20 seconds. Give it a chance for the hot water to purge. You can't just drop it in for a second. Leave it there for a few seconds, 10, 20 seconds, to allow the hot water to impact the kli, to purge out all of the flavors that were embedded in the body of the kli, and take it out. Now, while the water is boiling, it should be a rolling boil. Not just hot water. It has to be boiling water, meaning bubbling, rolling boiled water. I'll tell you just from practical experience, your pot will come to rolling boil much better if you keep the cover, the lid, on the pot. It will reach the rolling boil better. Otherwise, because of the air pressure, it gets the rolling boil better if you have the pot on, the pot cover on. Finally, there's a minhag after one kashers the kalim to rinse off with cold water. That's not a requirement. That's a minhag that we have that is the proper thing to do after you kasher your items with hot water. Now, there's one limitation that comes up with hagala, with kasher, with boiling water, and that is anything that has, because we just said that anything that has physical residue or guk or stuff that's still present, hagala doesn't work. The Rama says that anything that has small holes, we are concerned that they will not be properly cleaned. For example, if you have a drain on the bottom of your kitchen, on the bottom of your sink, that is a removable drain, and you want to use that drain for Pesach, that's not so simple. Because even if you pour boiling water over, since there are so many little holes, and there could be a little bit of chametz ban, of physical chametz in those, in or near those holes, that you're not going to be able to clean effectively, you're not going to be able to use this method of kashering of hagala on that part of your, on a drain. So therefore, I encourage you to go to the store, and for $5 or $6, you can get a different drain for your sink that will be your Pesach Tikka drain. Okay, let's talk about pots. How do you kasher pots in a similar way, except you don't, if you could fit a small pot in a big pot, that's great. But otherwise, if you take a small pot, if you have a big pot that you want to kasher, so it doesn't fit into anything else, you fill it up all the way to the top, and you bring it to a rolling boil. The only problem is we're worried about what about the chametz that might have spritzed on the outside of the lip. So here, we say that there's a halacha called Evan Melupan, a glowing stone. That's a little bit more complicated, and if you don't want to do it yourself, you can speak to me and we'll find a place to do it for you. But if you do have to, you take a wrench and you hold a piece of metal or a stone and hold it on a flame till it gets really hot. And when it gets really hot, you drop it into your boiling pot of water so that it overflows. The boiling water overflows and takes care of the lip as well. But again, that's something that is a little bit more complicated. So if you don't want to, if you're not sure how to clean, how to kasher a large pot, you could talk to me separately and privately. Now, the halakha is that you only have to kasher that which absorbed chametz. Absorption only happens with heat. So for example, if you have a, people call me sometimes, I have a milchka spoon. Why is it milchka? Well, I use it for milk, for my milk and cereal for the past 3 months. That's not a milchka spoon. Milchka spoon only happens when you take a spoon and stick it in hot milk or hot cheese. That's what makes it milchka. Just by using it for cereal and milk does not make it milchka. So similarly, if you have something that is not used with heat ever, what's the best example of it? Your refrigerator. Your refrigerator is always used with cold, and therefore nothing was absorbed into the body, into the racks of your refrigerator. So if that's the case, you don't have to kasher your refrigerator. You only need to clean your refrigerator. How do you clean your refrigerator? Just take some ammonia, take some Windex, take some cleanser, and wash up the shelves. If you want to do this in the bathtub, yeah, it's a lot easier that way. It's just easier to access everything, but you don't have to kasher anything. And if that's the case, let's talk about bechers, gavias, kostos, your silver cups. A lot of people like using their silver for the Pesach Seder. Now here, theoretically, we should just have to wash them clean with some soap. That should be totally fine because you never use them with hot. You never use them with hot chametz. However, the poskim say that when it comes to your silver bechers, we do want you to kasher them. And I'll tell you two reasons. Number one, because even though you don't necessarily put them with hot chametz, there's another way that something can absorb flavor of chametz or of treif, not just through heat, but also through kavush. Kavush kemavushal. Kavush means sun that soaks for 24 hours. So let's say, for example, you had a kos, you had your becher, and as you're eating your Saudi Shabbos meal a few weeks ago, there were some crumbs that were in it. And there was a little bit of grape juice or wine or water. And it was sitting with its crumbs, and you didn't get a chance to clean it till Sunday at some point, and it sat for 24 hours with the chametz sitting in it. So if that's the case, we're concerned that it will have absorbed the flavor of chametz. Or, for example, let's say you washed that becher with a hot chametz sticker sponge that had some particles of chametz in the sponge, and you washed it under the hot water. So therefore, we do assume that your bechers, your kosos, your gavias, your silver cups are indeed chametz sticker, and therefore we will kasher them. How will we kasher them? So again, as we said, you have to make sure that there's no residue whatsoever. If there's the outside, there's a filigree, I think it's called, the silver work that are you might want to make sure there's nothing, no particles in that filigree on the outside of the decorations of your silver cup. And then you'll, again, put it in your boiling water, leave it there for 20 seconds, take it out, rinse it with cold water, and you're good to go. Countertops. Countertops are always a favorite. Now, before I start, I will tell you that I'm a big believer in covering countertops. I know you have granite. I know you have marble. I know you wanted marble because you wanted to have a kosher basis. And you can, and we'll talk about it. I just happen to be a big believer in covering it, but again, that's my own shtick. Take it as you want. I think it's the easiest if you cover it. You cover it with corrugated plastic. You can have it all different ways of covering it. But okay, let's now talk about kosher and countertops. So first of all, as far as the material, let's assume that you have a stone countertop, pure stone, pure granite. If it's not pure stone, pure granite, but it's a plastic or an epoxy, like in Eretz Yisrael, what they call the shayish, which literally means marble, it's not really, it's not pure stone. It's an epoxy with a quartz. Also, we have quartz countertops that also has plastic in it. And typically, we don't kasher plastic for Pesach. Yes, there's a machlokas, but we typically assume that we're not going to kasher plastic for Pesach, except in extenuating circumstances, if you speak to me separately, if there are extenuating circumstances. But typically, we do not kasher plastic. And therefore, some of these epoxies have stone with plastic, like quartz, for example. So, mikar hadin, they can be kashered, because since the majority, the rove, of those quartz countertops and those shayish countertops are indeed stone, so either miut, the minority of plastic, which is not kasherable, is also, that's also chomer not to kasher plastic. So you have the majority of the countertop is made out of stone. And even the minority plastic, mikar hadin, probably could be kashered. So if you put those two things together, we come out that as long as it's majority stone countertop, you can kasher. So therefore, quartz countertops, even though they're not pure, even though they're not pure stone, they can be kasher. So how do you kasher? The way you kasher your sinks, the way you kasher your countertops, is you take boiling water, and you're going to need more than one pot of boiling water. You're going to probably have to boil up a whole bunch of pots. Now, I'm just a little nervous of you boiling up on all four burners in your kitchen on high at the same time, because there's just a lot of heat. So maybe do two diagonal burners at any point, and you're going to divide your sink or your countertop into sections. What you're going to do is you're going to boil up the water till it's a rolling boil. Remember, it has to be bubbling, rolling boil. After it's a rolling boil, you're going to take the water, and you're going to, first of all, I'm sorry, before you even get to the water, you have to make sure your countertop or sink is free of any physical residue and has not been used with any hot chametz in the past 24 hours. Once those two requirements are set, you'll pour the water. Now listen carefully, because this is a mistake a lot of people make. When you pour that water, let me try to illustrate this. Let's say I have a phone. I can't pour the water here, the boiling water here, and let the hot water stream down the bottom of the phone. No, that does not work. I have to pour the hot water so that the stream of hot water from the pot gets this point, and 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 this point. The stream of hot water itself has to touch every point of the surface which you are kashering. And because of that, you can't just take hot water, pour it, and let it drip down the height of the sink, or at the top of the counter, let it drip down the rest of the counter. That is not kashering. That does not work. And therefore, you're going to need a lot. If you do that, you don't need so much water. You just pour at the top and let it go down, let that water drip down, and that would take you, that would not require so much water. You're going to need a lot of water. And for counters and sinks, you sometimes need many pots to kasher. You have to make sure that the stream of water is hitting each of the spots of the surface that you are going to kasher. There are those, the Mishnah Berurah, for example, who talks about Evan Meluban in conjunction with kashering tabletops and counters and sinks. We're going to not mention that because it's not so practical and Mikra Hadin is not necessary. So I'm not going to go into that for those who are wondering about the requirement of Evan Meluban. People always ask me about steamers. Now, steamers, theoretically, in a perfect world, would be a very easy way to kasher a counter because steam is 212 degrees, and that's the same heat as that boiling water that you're pouring, because by definition, steam only becomes steam when it's 212 degrees Fahrenheit or 100 degrees Celsius. However, I will tell you that from a practical perspective, most steamers will not be effective unless it's a commercial steamer, in which case, great, I'm happy for you. But it's not something that I would assume, and certainly not to rely on. If you buy a $100 steamer from Costco or Bed Bath & Beyond, you can't assume that that will be sufficient to provide the heat that's necessary to kasher a countertop or a sink through a steamer. If you think that you've got yourself a really professional, great steamer that gives a huge amount of steam that, say, stays 212 degrees even on impact, even when it is touching the surface, and it heats up the surface where the liquid on the surface is 212 degrees, give me a call, and we could talk about the details, how to do that. Just learned from my own experience. If you are going to kasher your countertop and pour that boiling water, again, all over the entire countertop, so a few things. First of all, don't do this barefoot, because you're going to have boiling water splashing off your countertop onto your feet, so you're going to burn your feet. So first of all, wear clothes. Second of all, you might want to consider laying the floor with towels, because you're going to have a lot of water, because we described every point on the surface has to get its own stream of water pouring directly from the hot pot. So there's a lot of water going to be, you might want to line the floor in your kitchen with towels to absorb the water that's going to be spilling down. Also, wipe up the wood cabinets, because you don't want the wood to get ruined from the water that's going to be spilling down. Another suggestion, when you're doing your sink, an easier way to do it is always start from the top going downwards. If you start from the top, go around, around and around and around, from the top going lower, 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 lower. And as I mentioned before, you should, the drain itself should be replaced. You cannot catch your drain using hot water. So you should try to buy, either don't use your drain for, again, I'm talking about a drain that you remove, that little screen on the bottom of your drain, either remove it for Pesach and then use one, or if you're going to use one, then get a kosher Pesach one. Now, that all applies to a sink that can be kosher, like a stainless steel sink. If, on the other hand, you have a porcelain sink, which is not kosherable, then you can't kosher it. So the easiest thing is to use an insert. Between you and me, I think it's a lot easier, even if you have a stainless steel sink, to use an insert because it just saves you a lot of time. It saves a lot of agmas nefesh. It saves burned fingers and burned toes. And I encourage people, if you could buy it, the inserts cost about $20. So you'll have it for year after year after year. You'll need one for each. You know, if you have two sinks, you'll need two inserts for $40-$50, and you'll have it for many years in good health, hopefully. That's definitely not a bad investment. Now, if you do buy an insert, you're not obligated to kosher the sink if you're going to use an insert. I encourage you to pour some water at the base of the sink, right near the drain, because even if you have an insert, sometimes some things from the right near the bottom, the insert also has a drain. And underneath that, you don't want anything splashing up. You don't want anything. It's a great idea to kosher that area below the insert's drain on the metal drain. You might want to kosher that area too. Just that area with your hot water. That would be a great idea. Let's talk about the faucets. Now, the two types of faucets. There are regular faucets. Then, of course, you have the faucets with the spray hose that pull outwards and could be extend to get into pots and to reach areas that are better to reach. So before we talk about the pull-out faucets, let's talk about a regular faucet. The faucet is, of course, metal and can be koshered. It has to be koshered. We're worried that sometimes noodles spilled on it, and then on Pesach, you're going to touch something to it, and it will get that chametz flavor. So you're going to kosher your faucet by simply taking your, even if you have an insert, you still have to kosher the faucets. You'll take the pot of boiling water, and again, 24 hours since your faucet last touched chametz, which again, faucets don't touch chametz too long, unless you boil noodles every morning and pour it all over the place. But wait 24 hours from last contact with hot chametz and pour boiling water over your faucets. Now, if you have a faucet with a spray hole, we're going to have an issue. The issue that we have is the same issue that I mentioned with drains. The Ramah taught us that any situation where you have small holes, you can't kosher. So when you have a pull-out faucet hose, that hose has ribbing along the side of it. And that ribbing is something that's impossible to clean the areas of that ribbing. And because of that, it's not, according to the Ramah, it's not something that we could kosher with Haggalah. So that means you can't simply, or it's not reasonable to kosher the ribbing of that hose. So all you have to do is just leave the hose in for Pesach. Okay? So if you have a spray hose for your kitchen faucet, leave the hose inside and pretend you don't have a hose. Pretend you don't have a regular faucet, not with a hose, on Pesach. The rest of the hose, of course, just kosher it in the regular way. So that's as far as the sink. Any questions, feel free to text me. I'll send my number again, 646-369-6017. Again, 646-369-6017, and I'll take your questions in a few minutes. Let's now talk about, again, the refrigerator, the freezer. A lot of people want to know what happens if I have some stuff that I want to keep in my house during Pesach. It's refrigerated items. Let's say I have some frozen pie shells. I have frozen pie shells. I have frozen cookie dough. I have frozen challah dough. I don't want to throw it out for Pesach. And I don't want to say, I'm going to sell it, but can I keep that in my freezer if I still have my kosher Pesach stuff in the freezer? And the answer is, of course, 100%, that's fine. Just double bag it and leave it in the back of your freezer. Leave your chametz sticky stuff in a double bag in the back of your fridge. But let's talk now about cleaning the freezer and the fridge itself. Again, as we mentioned earlier, since it's not used with hot, all you have to do is wash it down with some cleanser that makes whatever particles might be there nifsal lachilas kelev, unsuitable to be eaten by a dog. Use some ammonia cleanser like Windex, and you can soak them in the tub. That's quick. Now, on the door, you have a gasket or an accordion. Use a Q-tip with a little bit of ammonia to get inside those cracks. And if you put the Q-tip with in some ammonia, in some Windex, and you slide that Q-tip, that moist Q-tip, through the gasket, through that accordion, ribbing at the door of your refrigerator, you will be in good shape. Now, as far as lining the shelves, Maker has it, it's not required. Although, because we're concerned with particles and we're dealing with food, I encourage you to line your shelves of your refrigerator. Now, how do you line your shelves? It doesn't matter whether you use aluminum foil, you use those plastic refrigerator liners that you could buy in the variety stores and the grocery stores, but be aware, there are two kinds of refrigerators. There are those with glass shelves, and there are those that have like a net shelves, metal or plastic covered metal that are netting or that have lines of shelves, but it's not complete plastic. If you do have the kind of shelves that are nets or that are just strings of metal, that means your refrigerator needs airflow. So if you're going to be lining it and blocking the airflow thereby, you could mess up your motor. So if you do line your shelves and you have those lines of metal, which is racks, that's what I was looking for. If you have racks as your shelves in your refrigerator, you will definitely want to make holes in the refrigerator liners so you don't overwork the motor of your refrigerator. This is not the time of year that you want to overwork your refrigerator motor. Of course, Some of you might have, even those of you, like in my house, I just look on top of my refrigerator and I put things there, but some of you are not as tall as I am. You don't typically look on top of your refrigerator, but your kids might hide their secret stashes on top of your refrigerator. So I encourage you to get on a chair and look on top of your refrigerator. Let's now talk about shelves in your pantry. Well, shelves in your pantry, all you have to do is wipe them down and they're kosher. If you want to be on the safer side, you're welcome to line them with any kind of material that you want. That's a chumrah. It's not required, just wipe it well, but if you can line it, that's wonderful. Let's now talk about stovetops. Actually, let me take some questions now, and then we'll talk about stovetops afterwards. Somebody asked, after we kosher with Haggalah in boiling water, and you want to rinse it off, rinse the item off, you can rinse it off in cold water in any sink. It doesn't have to be Pesach sink, it can be rinsed off in any sink. Next question. I have a doctor in our shul who says that a Shari member, I don't know who it is, did in the past pour boiling water on their counters and suffered bad burns because of it. And it happened to them twice. So I do urge caution when you're dealing with carrying those pots of boiling water. Do so carefully. Cover your toes. Wear gloves to protect yourself from hurting yourself, and be wary so you don't burn yourself. Thank you. Maker Hadin, again, regarding the refrigerator shelves, you're not required to cover your shelves, but it's a good idea to cover them with any material. Okay, somebody asked me, what about doing hagala on the lids of your pots? The halacha is, you could do hagala, you could kasher metal, you could kasher plastic, but we don't do that for Pesach, so you could kasher metal, but glass we do not kasher. And therefore, if you have a glass lid to your pot, you cannot kasher the glass lid to your pot. We do not kasher glass. Hot plates we'll talk about later. As far as kashering your sink, you could kasher either the sink first or the faucet first. There's no halachic difference, but it might just be easier to, it doesn't make a difference, whatever you want. Okay, disposable plates can all be used. Don't worry about coatings for the disposable plates. If you have a pull-out hose, leave it. Don't use it for Pesach. Leave it inside. Don't try to kasher it. If you have a tea kettle, that is a wonderful way to kasher. It's better than pots because when you pour pots, the water could fall all over the place, and tea kettle gives you a directed stream to direct your stream to the place that you want to kasher. That's a great idea to use a tea kettle as opposed to a pot. The problem is when you have to kasher an entire sink or a large counter, one tea kettle will not get you far, and you're probably going to need many pots and many cycles of pots. So tea kettle will do a little bit, but you're probably still going to need a lot of pots. Instant hot. Excellent question. Instant hot. You can't kasher instant hot. Oh, actually, the instant hot faucet is plastic. Even though it looks metal, it's chrome looking, but it's probably plastic. So we'll have to get back. I'll ask somebody to ask me later this week what's the halacha with instant hot, because typically we don't kasher plastic. And the faucet, again, at your instant hot looks chrome, but it's actually plastic. So we'll have to discuss that another time. Okay. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to talk about ovens, and then we will take a, maybe we'll stop this year. We'll have a follow-up shiur to other aspects of the kitchen, because there's a lot to cover, and I don't want this to be a 2.5-hour shiur. Let's talk now about ovens. Now, there are two parts of ovens. There's, of course, the oven cavity and, of course, the stove. Let's talk about the stovetop first. So whenever we speak about kashering, there are two types of kashering. There's what we've been speaking about until now, which is boiling water, hagala, and that's great to, as the Torah says, I don't remember the pasuk exactly, but Chazal said in their inimitable words, kibolo kachpoto. However, something absorbs flavor, that's how you purge it of that flavor. So anything that was absorbed through hot water, you purge it by hagala with putting in the boiling water. But of course, stovetops, ovens, grates that are, and barbecue grills, for example, that absorb through flame cannot be kashered through hot water. You need flame to purge it from its chametz that it absorbed. So therefore, since stovetops, for example, a pasta noodle fell on your stovetop and was absorbed through the heat of the fire on a stovetop, so you're going to have to kasher your stovetops. How are you going to do it? The grates, the best way to do it, and this is what I always tell people, if you have a self-clean oven, put anything that is pure metal that you want to kasher and will not get destroyed in your self-clean oven, and it will kasher easily, except it sometimes could affect the coloring. So let's say, for example, you have grates. Now, grates, when you buy new stovetop grates, they have a little bit of a luster, a tiny shine, not a shine, even if they're not, they still have a little bit of a shine. If you put that in your self-clean oven, you took care of everything. You don't have to wait 24 hours. You don't even have to clean off the residue. You could put it in dirty with gook on it into your self-clean oven without waiting 24 hours, and it's completely kosher, brand new when you take it out. But if you put a new grate on, it will come out of the self-clean cycle a little bit having lost its luster. It was an executive decision that my family decided it's well worth the energy to lose a little bit of the luster of our kitchen grates, and we did it, and it just makes life a lot easier. If, however, a person does not want to lose the luster and does not want to put their grates into the self-clean cycle, or a person does not have a self-clean oven, then what you do is you take your oven grates, you invert them upside down, right? Let's say this is my oven grate. You turn it upside down, and you put it into the flame. You turn the flames on high, and you leave it there for about half hour, 45 minutes. Now, according to halacha, you wait till it burns, until it starts to glow red. But I will tell you that that concept that the poskim speak about, even the achronim speak about, that metal has to glow red to be rendered libo, to be considered libo, and that it's kashered, that was when they were using metals that were not processed. The metals that we use, that the General Electric provides for us and Maytag provides for us, the modern metals are treated so they will not glow red, even when they reach the requisite temperature of libo. So don't wait till your grates turn red, because they might never turn red. Just invert them so that they're sitting actually in the fire, not on top of the fire, but in the fire. Leave them there for about half hour, 40 minutes, and they're kashered. I will urge you not to do all four burners at the same time, because if you have all four burners on high at the same time, it's a very, very hot situation. And therefore, I encourage you to do two diagonals, and then the other two diagonals switch off when you kasher your burners, so you don't have all four burners on high at the same time. Underneath the grates, you have what's called a drip pan. You should, again, lift off the grates, and you have that drip pan sitting there. You should cover the drip pan with aluminum foil. Now, when you do that, you have to make sure of two things. First of all, your oven probably has a vent that comes to the top of the oven in the back or the front, I don't know where it is based on your oven, of where the stovetop is. You cannot cover the vent because that could ruin your oven underneath the stovetop. So make sure you identify where that vent from your oven below the stovetop is coming out of into the stovetop. Do not cover that vent. Secondly, if you have electric ignition, when you cover make sure that you don't cover the areas of the stovetop that needs access for the electric ignition. When you do it, on your stovetop, you'll see the little things sticking out that cause the sparks for the electric ignition of your burners, and make little holes wherever you need to make a little hole. Now, one issue that a lot of people are concerned about is right above the oven. Right above the oven, there's often a net. And in that net, there could be all kinds of gook and all kinds of absorption of chametz. So let's say last week you boiled up a pot of noodles. Now, you didn't see, but if you stick your head underneath the hood of your oven and look upwards, you might find that right on top of you, there's that net that has absorbed all of the flavor, all the steam of that pasta that boiled into it. Now, next week, you're going to put your kosher Pesach soup in that same place, boiling that same steam straight up. That steam is going to be connecting that flavor that's absorbed in the roof of the oven, the bottom of the hood of the oven, connected to your Pesach tikka soup. So I encourage you is on top of the, again, you have your stovetop here, then you have your pot, and then the hood above that, underneath the bottom of your hood, line the bottom of your hood with aluminum foil, and that will prevent the connection of your Pesach tikka food, the steam of your Pesach tikka foods, connecting to that netting or that metal that has previously absorbed chametz tikka steam. That's something that I encourage you to do as you kosher your stovetop. Don't forget about the bottom of the hood above your stovetop. Again, as we finish discussing the stovetop, when you have your knobs, of course, if they have indentations, you want to clean them well. You could soak them with a little bit of ammonia. You could cover them. It's easy. Just cover them with aluminum foil. You don't have to freak out if the aluminum foil falls off. But if you get some ammonia into those cracks, the indentations of your knobs, you don't have to be worried about any chametz chas v'shalom getting from the crack to your fingers and into your kosher piece of food. That's something to be considered. Now let's talk about the oven itself. So if you have a self-clean oven, life is easy, except the only thing that you have to be concerned with are the gaskets and glass door. So the gaskets around the rim of the door, you have to get into that area. You want to clean out any gook from there. There's definitely gook there. And that's as far as a self-clean oven. Keep in mind, there are different types of self-clean ovens. Some have something called mini cycle or aqua lift, which cleans a little bit, but doesn't have a full self-clean cycle. Those cycles do not necessarily reach the requisite temperature that's necessary for kashering, the temperature that's necessary for libun, which is approximately 850 degrees Fahrenheit. And therefore, if you just do one of these mini cycles, it will get to, let's say, 600, 700, but will not kasher your oven. So therefore, you have to do a full self-clean cycle. Now, if you put a self-clean cycle on and it turns off after, sometimes something happened, it turned off, let's say, 4-hour cycle, and it turned off after 2.5 hours, oftentimes after 2 hours, it reaches the requisite temperature. But if it turns off after half an hour or 40 minutes, it might not have yet reached that requisite temperature of 850 degrees Fahrenheit. So you do have to run a full self-clean cycle. Now, if you don't have a self-clean oven and you're still going to be cleaning your oven, here we have machlokas. So Moshe Feinstein is machmir. I don't know anyone who's machmir for him, but what he says is if you have a regular conventional oven, you have to either use a blowtorch or you have to put a tin box inside your oven. Because since it was absorbed through flame, the only way to kasher is with libon, which is 850 degrees, your oven only reaches 500 degrees. And therefore, according to Moshe Feinstein, you can't easily kasher a regular conventional oven that it does not have the self-clean cycle. Because that's so difficult, the Minhag HaOlam is not like that chumrah of Moshe Feinstein. And therefore, the majority of the posts can rely on Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Salavechik, who assumed that since the highest heat that your oven could ever have reached in the first place when it absorbed the chametz was on broil, which is around 550 degrees, so you could use that same temperature to purge it of the chametz that it had absorbed, that same broil feature, that highest temperature, 550 degrees. And therefore, if you have a regular conventional oven without self-clean cycle, you do have to clean your oven well first. You do have to wait 24 hours before you turn on, you kasher it. So you wait 24 hours, you'll clean it. Now, we can't just clean it with palm oil. You can't just clean it with a little bit. You have to clean it with a real proper oven cleanse, which are more caustic, C-A-U-S, not cost more, but C-A-U-S-T-I-C. There's stronger cleansers, and they will clean the ovens more effectively. After you do that and you scrub, sometimes you see there's like this black stuff you can't get off no matter what. If you scrubbed and scrubbed and you use your cleanser, it doesn't come off, don't worry about it. Move on. That could be just a burnt part that burnt into the wall of the oven. Don't worry about it. It happens all the time, and you're not going to get it out. So try. If it doesn't work, use some steel wool and use some oven cleanser that didn't come off. Move on. Don't worry about it. And then after you clean it, you could turn your oven on high for an hour, on the very highest temperature that it is, for an hour and a little quarter, and that will be how you'll kosher your oven. Of course, all the grates have to have been cleaned, as we just described, but if you do have the opportunity to use a self-clean oven, that takes care of a lot of issues. I urge you, do not use a blowtorch. Somebody earlier called me today and said, oh, I could just blowtorch this or that, and I told them absolutely not. I personally know somebody who used a blowtorch to kosher their oven and their apartment building caught on fire, and the entire apartment building was out of their house for Pesach and for a few months. So do not use a blowtorch unless you are a trained professional who is accustomed to using blowtorches with appropriate precautions. Do not use a blowtorch and try to kasher with a blowtorch. Okay, I think we're going to stop here for this year. We'll have a follow-up shiur Be'ezus Hashem to talk about microwaves, warming drawers, water coolers, platas, Keurigs, candlesticks, hot water urns, barbecue grills, dishwashers, toasters, and other things. But I want to just go through the questions that came in from this shiur, and then we'll end this shiur. We'll have another shiur at another time, not today. Let's take the questions. Again, if you want to send in a question, please dial this number. See what questions came in over the past little while. Yeah, the hood on top of your, somebody asked, should we not use the hood? That is correct. If you have a hood that is directly a few inches over your Pesach pass, that's going to be a problem. If the hood is higher up, it's like 2 feet above your pass, there's nothing to worry about. But if it's just a few inches or half a foot, you know, that the flow of steam goes directly from the pot that you're cooking and the steam reaches the hood, that hood should be covered. The bottom of that hood should be covered and to prevent the connection of the chametz that's absorbed in the hood touching through the steam medium, the pot of Pesach, the food that you're cooking. Barbecue, grates, and drip pan can be kosher in a self-clean cycle. Self-clean cycle koshers everything. When you do a self-clean cycle, anything that is pure metal, you could put in the self-clean cycle and kosher. If, for example, you have a pot that has a plastic handle, you could kosher it, even if it's dirty, even if it's used within 24 hours, but the plastic handles will melt. So anything with the plastic handle, don't try to kosher with the self-clean cycle. Also, very important to know, when we spoke about koshering pots, that only applies to pots, not frying pans. Frying pans, for whatever the reason, which we're not going to go into now, is considered something that has to be kosher through libun. And in order to kosher a frying pan, you must do libun, not hagala. You can't kosher a frying pan with boiling water. You have to put a frying pan in a self-clean cycle. And therefore, if you have Teflon, which is plastic, it will be destroyed in a self-clean cycle. And it will become carcinogenic in a self-clean cycle. So anything that is plastic or Teflon has to be kosher some other way. The problem is we don't kosher plastic for Pesach. And Teflon is a plastic coating. So anything that is Teflon cannot be kosher for Pesach. Let me repeat that. Anything that is Teflon, which is a plastic coating, as far as I understand, unless somebody in the industry corrects me, maybe I'm wrong, Teflon is plastic and cannot be kosher for Pesach. Barbecue, we'll not talk about now. The oven door gaskets, the way you clean it is you go inside, you try to get into the, you might have to use some toothpicks to get into the gasket around the door of the oven. And you clean out whatever you can. Whatever you can't reach in your that's stuck between the gasket and the door, you could spray with some cleanser that makes it inedible. Okay, next question. What is the status of the pot used for Haggalah? If nothing has been used in the past 24 hours, the pot that was used for Haggalah remains what it was beforehand. It is not ruined. It is not changed by the koshering process. For self-cleaning, if you're going to put your grates onto your stovetop in your oven, you do not have to do anything else to them. You don't have to put them in a flame. You don't have to clean them. Anything that's put in a self-clean cycle is kashered entirely from beginning to end. Hand soaps, you do not have to check for chametz in your hand soaps. If you have an outdoor grill that you're not going to be using, you don't have to kasher it. You can leave it as is, just leave it closed, and you will not worry about it till after Pesach. I'm just going to look. I have another bunch of questions that came in. Roll-on deodorant, excellent question. Roll-on deodorant, if it is a liquid, I don't know the exact situation of roll-on, but if it's a liquid and has alcohol, that could be problematic. Okay, I just want to tell everybody on benstorah.com, benstorah.com, the audio aspect of the shiur will be posted. I want to thank you all for joining.
You have been listening to a presentation of benstorah.com.